Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Tuesday, April 7th, and that means it's time for Tony Tuesdays. That's right, Tony Cirino, former co-host, rejoins the show. We get to talking about Tony being able to brag about his fantasy draft football win, yawn. And then we get to dig in about the results of Pittsburgh Media March Madness bracket. We'll have more on that later. Then, of course, we talk about the NFL's all-decade team, 2010, being announced. Two Steelers made it. We talk about who made it, why they made it, and what other Steelers maybe should have made it. Then we talk about Nick Vanette and some of his talks about with the Steelers. He just did a little bit about them and some interesting comments that, you know, drop some questions. So Tony and I ask those questions and answer them amongst ourselves. Then finally, we actually have a special guest, Mike Tomlin, will come on the show and will give a postseason press conference for my run in the Pittsburgh Media March Madness bracket representing my team. So, Locked On listeners, if you're already a subscriber, thank you very much. If you'd like to subscribe, please hit the subscribe button on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are hosted. Let's get into it. All right, everyone, it's Tuesday, April 7th. That means it's Tony Tuesdays! Tony Cirino, former co-host of the Locked On Steelers podcast, is back to join me on the show today. Tony, how you doing, my man? How was your weekend?
Doing well. Had a good weekend. As we talked about on Friday, I kind of lost track of what day it was, but that's, you know, that is quarantine life now, right? It's like, you know, these days run together. I know you're still going to work every day. I am not. I am home every day. I don't think I've left the house in 2 weeks now, maybe more than 2 weeks. I don't know. Chris, it's a strange world out there.
It is strange, man. I got to say, it's really strange. It's even stranger when you continue to win Fantasy Draft Friday contests. I don't know how you do this. And you're currently in the standings lead. You have 4 points. Both Hunter and I have 1 point. He came in second this week. I came in third. So now you have established a big lead of 4 points to 1 points for each of us. Yeah. Tony, the floor is yours to gloat and talk trash for a second week. God, listeners, what are you doing?
Well, first of all, I want to give props to Hunter, who, you know, when I first saw the vote, you put the vote up, Friday morning?
Yeah.
Is when you put it up, right? So I think I saw it maybe early Friday afternoon, and Hunter was in third place at the time, and you and I were kind of neck and neck for the lead. And Hunter immediately went into, like, full politic mode where he's, like, looking for votes. He's canvassing door to door, everyone in the Facebook group. Here are the reasons why he's putting out spreadsheets and all that. So I give Hunter credit because, like, he did get a lot of people on his side. But, you know, for a second week in a row, the obvious winner here was me. I think, you know, here's where I got lucky, right? Here's what I learned from Hunter last week is that when Hunter took Javon Hargrave and Devin Bush on the defense list, I thought, oh, that's interesting because all the young Steeler fans are going to vote for him because they know Devin Bush. They know Javon Hargrave. Now, they haven't seen these 70s players. So I kind of used that to my advantage this week by taking Juju and Deontay Johnson, who, if I'm being honest, I probably wouldn't put them on my top five wide receiver list. In fact, I wouldn't have drafted them. But knowing that our fans are probably going to skew a little younger.
He fooled. He's admitting. He fooled all of you.
I'm just saying.
He was the best.
Just using the knowledge of, like, we have a lot of young fans, right? Because it's a podcast.
Listeners, Locked On listeners, you've been deceived by Tony Cirino. Don't fall for this again. When we do Fantasy Draft Friday this week, be sure to vote for me and not him. And don't vote for Hunter either. Just vote for me.
Here's what plays against that, Chris, is that Hunter finished second. Now, a lot of it, I think, has to do with his politicking. But he took Buddy Dial, a player –
yeah.
None of our listeners have seen play. None of them. Zero. Zero listeners have seen Buddy Dial play.
All right.
And yet he finishes second.
So before we get into, like, the talking about our first major segment, I know we've been talking about a lot of things here, but gotta acknowledge I have lost the Pittsburgh Media March Madness tournament to Bill Hillgrove. It was a slaughtering of 66-33%. We put up a great fight though. We're going to do at the end of this show, as I mentioned in the intro, Mike Tomlin has agreed to come on the show and do a postseason press conference to explain, what happened in this tournament.
It's a big get for you, Chris.
I can't believe that he agreed to do this. Mike Tomlin and I, we go way back. Anyways,
So to reward you listeners, because you came out every week for me, and I know that I had a tequila shot bet, and Tony was going to get me a Devlin Hodges jersey. We're going to give you something. So we're going to do this segment at the end of the show where Mike Tomlin is going to come on the show and explain, you know, explain what happened there. And then also leading up to it, I'm still going to take tequila shots, but I'm going to take one for each round that we won. So we're going to take two in this first segment and then two in the second segment.
Two in the second. Oh, okay. I thought it was one and one, but okay.
Yeah, and I mean, well, you can't take it during the postseason press conference. God, Tony, come on, have some professional class about you. But yeah. So Tony will call when they happen during these conversations. This conversation we're about to have. So let's without further ado, let's get into it. Tony, our first discussion here. The 2010s All-Decade NFL team roster came out officially. And we talked about this a couple weeks back when Dale gave his list. Mm-hmm. And so now we get a chance to review the players. Going down the line, the Steelers that made the list were Marquise Pouncey at the center position and Antonio Brown at wide receiver. You had your obvious choices, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, though – there's been some interesting debate of, is it really Aaron Rodgers? Should Peyton Manning be considered? Should Russell Wilson be considered?
Drew Brees should be on that. You know, should Drew be in that Brees. Conversation. Yeah.
Yep. Now the only thing you can say about Drew Brees is he didn't win a Super Bowl in the decade. So sure. That'd be the one thing that would work against him. But still, I think that there's some comparable. But I mean, you have to have Tom Brady in there. I mean, you just have to. But Aaron Rodgers, I do feel like he. I mean, he's a great quarterback. I think he's earned a spot. But so I think Russell Wilson is just as worthy a candidate.
I think so too. And we talked about this before, right? How I would have put Peyton Manning on this part of it just because of the insane numbers that he put up. I know he only played a couple years in this decade, and it did seem like. Well, I mean, I guess you could argue with Drew Brees being I was going to say, you could argue that this is a list about who had the most best years, right, is how they kind of decided this, or it seems like that's what the voters were voting on here. But the most best years, I mean, Aaron Rodgers has had a lot of down years, especially recently. Drew Brees has not. Although, and you brought up the idea of, you know, Rodgers won the Super Bowl, right, 2010. In fact, it was on Fox the other day. Did you watch it, by the way? Did you turn it on at all?
45. No, I'm okay not reliving that. I've also rewatched that thing probably about 10 different times already. So like I know when things are happening. Like I was able to tune back in when they started their comeback. But I know when to turn that game on and off.
Yeah. When to turn it off. That's turn it off at the beginning. Turn it on. What is it like? Second quarter. Beginning of the second quarter. And then turn it off again in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I think it's even like middle of the second quarter when they start there because they're down 21-3. No, it's late second quarter. They were down 21-3 with like less than a minute to go in the first half. I mean,
oh, that's right, because they get the kickoff and then score again.
Yeah, that's how crazy the game. I have a crazy story about just watching that game. I was student government president at Chain University and I organized this entire watch party that was in the student union building. During this watch party, we had all these different people coming. Were there? It was a huge crowd, but I was off to the side watching it in my own space in this little TV room. And the feed that was getting into Cheney was we always did these conference calls with my entire family. So it'd be my dad, his two older brothers, and me. And we'd be on this conference call together talking about the game every week. And my Uncle Clarence was in Arizona. And for whatever reason, his feed was like 2 minutes ahead of mine. So So I knew everything before was happening because he couldn't contain himself. So as they're losing, like, oh, this is horrible. But then when they started to come back, like, Ben Roethlisberger hits Mike Wallace on the 25-yard touchdown pass. And I just hear him say what happened. And I put my phone down and I walk out into this auditorium. And, you know, everyone, you know, the Steelers are still in a huddle. And I'm like, this is it right here. Throw it to Mike Wallace. There we go. Bang, he's going to hit Mike Wallace. It's going to be a touchdown. Everyone's like, yeah, shut up, Chris. Then it happens. Everyone's like, oh, shit. That was kind of wild.
Nostradamus.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, that's what I said. So I come back. Then they score another touchdown. And then I'm like, and they're going for two. So I come out of there, and they're going for two. And then they do both. And then people look at me and they're like, okay, that's freaky. What the heck is going on? And so then that's when I established to everyone in my college that I was this clairvoyant with the Steelers when really it was just I had a 2-minute lead on the field.
That is still, though, I mean, that's such a sad Super Bowl loss. It hurts me more. Super Bowl 30, right? I was like 10 years old when Super Bowl 30 happened. So that one hurt me as a kid, right? But, you know, the Steelers were such underdogs in that game to Troy Aikman, you know, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, that great Cowboys team. They should have won the game. If Neil O'Donnell doesn't throw those two interceptions, they win the game. But that Super Bowl 45, man, the momentum that the Steelers had going at that point, if Mendenhall never fumbles, the Steelers go. The Steelers win their seventh Lombardi. In fact, you know what, Chris? To wash away the memory here, we need you to take a shot. We need you to take a shot to wash
away the memory. When is this coming? All right. Here comes my first one. This is also Lunazul El Humoso. Listen, it was the only – I was running out of tequila options at the liquor store, y'all. So here we go. Down ahead.
All right.
Oh, my God. Ah, what did
I
do?
You feel better, though? You feel better because
I do not. I do not. Oh, God. Okay,
I feel better.
You feel better. I'm glad you do. Doing this for you, buddy. All right. So moving on to the running backs. It was Frank Gore, Marshawn Lynch, LeSean McCoy. I feel like that's a strong list. I mean, Marshawn Lynch was beast mode. LeSean McCoy was good for so long. And Frank Gore, I mean, he's still playing.
Right. See, Frank Gore is one of those guys, though, who it's like, you know, was he one of the best running backs this decade? Only because he's played at such a high level for so long. I don't think no one's ever considered Frank Gore the best running back in the league at any point in his career, right? And this is a thing that they used against Bettis, right, back in the day. It's like Bettis was never the best running back in the league either. So I have a hard time making this argument, but the reason I make it is because, you know, look, I know Le'Veon Bell didn't play that long. Like, you know, he only played, 5 years for the Steelers before he ended up sitting out? But, man, those 5 years were really, really good. And you know, I could look, if I'm going to take any running back off this list, it would be Frank Gore, and I would put Le'Veon on it. But Le'Veon played, you know, only 5 years this decade. Frank Gore played, you know, the entire decade and is still going at an absurd age.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Moving on, we got to speed this up so we can get through everything. I agree with the wide receiver list pretty much. Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, that all four are prolific guys and played for most of the decade. I have no problem with that list. Again, you had Marquise Pouncey make the center. One thing, as an argumentative point, we're going to skip a lot here because we've already talked about this. But Joe Hayden made a very interesting post today.
Yeah.
Because the four cornerbacks that were listed were, you had Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman, and Chris Harris Jr. And Joe Hayden put up a whole stat list. Of all those guys put together, and he showed of the guys that were listed, Joe Hayden has the second most interceptions, only with 27, only behind Richard Sherman's 35.
Mm-hmm.
He had the most breakups by far. He had 137. The next closest was Richard Sherman with 114. And he played the entire decade. And Richard Sherman had one less year. Pat Peterson had one less year. Chris Harris had one less year. And then Revis retired in 2017, so he had two less years. But, I mean, still, Joe Hayden makes a very strong case that he should have been on this list. I know he didn't have the benefit of a Super Bowl, and he played for the Browns for most of the decade. But, you know, do you agree that he should have been in over maybe Patrick Peterson or Chris Harris?
I think so. Here's the problem. You mentioned it. He played for the Browns. I mean, that's the real problem here. Right. Yeah. And I know Joe Thomas made it as a tackle, but, you know, being a tackle on the Browns, being a good tackle on the Browns, he can kind of be, you know, not to say he was silent, but, like, you know, tackles or offensive linemen don't necessarily become household names. Whereas corner is one of those kind of, you know, big play positions. And on the Cleveland Browns team that was, you know, giving up all those points defensively and basically crap offensively for the entire decade. That's what hurts him the most. Right. Because statistically speaking, he's there. But. No, you know, you look at what these guys accomplished, right? Revis Island and all of that throughout the last decade. You know, Richard Sherman winning that Super Bowl with Seattle and being kind of the face of that Seahawks defense. I mean, Patrick Peterson, you know, look, Patrick Peterson played for the Cardinals for the last 10 years. So that's another guy who played for, you know, a bad organization over the last 10 years. But he made it. I think there's a strong argument to put him on the list. I think that the reason he didn't is because he's a Brown.
Yeah, I think that has to be. Part of the reason there. And you know, safeties wise, it was Eric Berry, Earl Thomas, Eric Weddle, and Tyrann Mathieu, which, I mean, that makes sense to me as well. But Yeah, just it's tough. But the one thing I'll say about Revis, because you look at him, he had the least amount of interceptions and the least amount of breakouts, but that's why he was Revis Island. No one threw at him.
No one threw his way, yeah.
Right. The other case I'll make for a Steeler that should have made the list, I think Cam Hayward should have been in there. Just looking at these guys, I think that you could have put him in for Ndamukong Suh or Geno Atkins, the way he played defensive tackle. And I know he only really came on strong like that in the second half of the decade. But, I mean, this guy's been a dominant force in the league for quite some time now. I feel like they should have found a way to put him on this list.
Yeah, and how many really good years? I mean, Sue's been a solid player, but how many really great years did That's Sue true. Have over this time period, right? Because this is a guy who's going to be on, what, his fourth team now? Or played on four different teams during that time frame, right? I think you have to take that into account. Like, teams just, you know, they were like, all right, we've had our fill of Ndamukong Suh. His play never eclipsed the person of Ndamukong Suh. And I think people just didn't want him around, or the money didn't match his production. And I think you have to take that into account. I'm with you. I would put Hayward over Suh on this list.
Cool. Wow. That does that. The Steelers, there's no way, you know, you could argue that Chris Boswell was very good, but you can't beat Steven Goskowski and Justin Tucker.
Tucker had to make the list.
Yeah, Tucker.
We did argue a little bit about punt return and kick return on the last one, and I think they get this right. Tyreek Hill, Darren Sproles, Devin Hester, Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, as a kick returner, you know, we did this last time, but Patterson, I think, was the one where we both went, maybe not. But I look at that. I mean, again, I look at them. I think they made the right choices here.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think you could put Antonio Brown, back in this conversation.
Yeah, but I would do it as a punt returner, not a kick returner.
Punt returner, exactly. And that's the question. Do you put him in there for Sproles? I don't think you put him in there for Hill, because Hill's speed was just on another level. But I thought that was cool. So that's the list. And coach-wise, Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll were your top two coaches. Belichick is an obvious one. Pete Carroll, you have to say, because he won a Super Bowl and he went to two in this decade. Mike Tomlin's been done the same, but the first of which came at in the 2000s decade, so it made sense.
Right, and the thing about Pete Carroll, much like Mike Tomlin did last year, right? The Steelers were thought last year to be bottoming out as a team, right? They're going to go 3-13, 5-11, stuff we talked about last year.
Right.
They end up going 8-8. You know, Pete Carroll had that kind of year. What was it, 2-3 years ago, when everyone talked about how bad that Seahawks roster was, and all they have is Russell Wilson, and he got that team. I believe that team made the playoffs that year, and they stayed relevant throughout the entire decade. So, So I'll give it to Pete Carroll as well. All right, Chris. Before we go to break, though, you got to take that second shot.
Okay. All right. Shot.
Thought you were gonna get away with it.
I honestly was about to go to break. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Oh, I should have got some limes. That's some strong stuff. All right, we'll be back right after this break. All right, we are back. So, I know one of our favorite things to do here with Tony, of course, is when he gets to be conspiracy theorist Tony and put on his tinfoil hat.
It's tinfoil hat time, Chris. I'm excited.
It's tinfoil hat time. So something I didn't get to last week too much of was tight end Nick Vannett. He signed with the Broncos, I believe it was, so he's gonna join that team and get a shot there. But he came out and he made some interesting comments about the Steelers here, Tony. And Hunter, our colleague who came in second this week in fantasy draft Friday, he wrote an interesting piece about it on dkpittsburghsports.com. It's free to everyone, so if you go to dkpittsburghsports.com and look down our Steelers page, we got this out here. He also tweeted it out on his Twitter page. But he brought up, it was interesting because he came out and said, basically, I can't say I have too many great things to say about that organization, speaking on the Steelers, just from my time being there, because it wasn't the most pleasant experience I ever had. He's saying this to the guy, to the reporters in Denver now.
It's a weird one.
Yeah, it seems odd because, he brought up when he came to Pittsburgh. He said, I mean, growing up in Columbus, there were so many Steelers fans. That's all you see is black and yellow. It's either they're that or Browns fans. Obviously, I'm not going to be a Browns fan. And then, you know, he talked, I mean, he seemed happy to be with the Steelers organization. He talked a lot of, you know, positively about it. And he also spoke the same way about the Seattle Seahawks when he left them. He said, I always felt like toward the end of my tenure with the Seahawks, I felt like I was slowly getting kicked to the curb a little bit. They had another guy, a young guy, they brought in Will Dissly. They were pretty high on, and they kind of saw him to be my successor. And you know, he, it's, and Hunter does a good job showing he praises the Steelers when he got there. And now all of a sudden, he doesn't, feel that he was, too happy. And before I get to you, Tony, with your conspiracy theories, I just want to, this other thing he said, as far as my role, I think they were just looking for me to come in and just be effective in the run game. I don't know exactly what they're planning this year, but by seeing them signing Melvin Gordon, kind of adding some more depth in the running back room, I think they're going to really make the run game a big part of the offense this year, speaking on the Broncos. I think they're just looking for guys to come in and do an effective job at blocking and really helping out in the run game. He said, it seemed like I came into an organization with the Steelers where the wheels were starting to fall off a little bit. Whoa.
That's okay. Keep going.
Wheels falling off. And then he says, guys were getting hurt. Ben Roethlisberger was down. So I feel like I never really got to experience the true benefits, the true atmosphere of that Steelers, that the Steelers normally would have, because I came into a crazy situation. So interesting stuff there, Tony. What's your initial readout on all this?
Well, but before we get into the tinfoil hat stuff that I have, well, let's get you in the right mindset, right? We got to get you ready for a tinfoil hat segment. Let's do one more. Let's do one more shot, and then we'll get ourselves into what I think is a very interesting situation with Nick Vanette.
I forgot to pull myself one second.
It's okay. You'll remember, Chris. By the way, Vanette was a guy. You know, one of my favorite moments of our tenure as
taking the shot.
Okay, go ahead.
That was not for you to stop. I was just letting you know that.
Okay. You know, we argued about the value of a fifth-round pick. That was one of my favorite segments we ever did.
Right.
So, you know, Vanette was a guy who came in. The Steelers traded a fifth-round pick for him. He came in, right? This was a guy. Grimble got hurt. They had to bring him in. Now, when he leaves, and all of a sudden he starts saying things like, when I got there, the wheels were starting to fall off a bit. Guys were getting hurt. Ben was down. So I feel like I never got to experience the true benefits, the true atmosphere that the Steelers normally would have, because I came in on a crazy situation. Then he says, I can't say that I have too many great things to say about the organization. Okay, what is he getting at here? Because the time that he came in was, yes, it was a crazy time. Ben went down, right? But that was when the team kind of came together, because, you know, they lost that game, the very next game, to the 49ers, right? That's the first game that I think he played in, because he got traded. When did he get traded? Was it right after Ben, when Ben got hurt, right? It was like the 49ers game, or right after the 49ers game? I forget which game
Ben got hurt in the Seahawks game,
right?
And then you saw the Niners came in, and it was the Bengals game. That's when he got – I think that was his first one.
Right. That's even better, right? Because what kind of crazy time is this? The Steelers would then go on from that Bengals game, I believe, to win like 6 out of 7 or something like that. Yeah. That's not a crazy time. That was when that was like the team at its best. Yeah. They would beat the Bengals, lose to the Ravens, and then go on to win 5 out of 6 and then 8 out of 9.
Yeah.
This is the run he's talking about, where he's like, the wheels are coming off. There's no wheels coming off when you're winning 8 out of 9 games. Okay.
Right.
But the wheels coming off comment, if that had been about the end of the season, because the last three games of the year, you could definitely argue the wheels came off. And something that I think I've worried about with this team and the way that last season played out, and you remember comments that were made after Joey Porter got let go 2 years ago about the defense and the offense kind of being pitted against one another, right? And that was one of the reasons why they felt like Joey Porter had to go, or at least, you know, that was according, I believe, to Jerry Dulac of the Post-Gazette, who reported that. Now, if the wheels fell off in that way at the end of last year, and the offense was crap, and the offense never really got good, right? I mean, I love Duck to my dying breath, but even Duck, you know, couldn't save that offense. I mean, that offense was bad throughout. And even the moments where Duck looked confident, the offense never looked, you know, anything other than, you know, one of the worst in the league. So when he talks about he never had a great time there and all that, I mean, it felt to me, Chris, like a lot of what happened last year was the locker room coming together, that this was a team that was much more, you know, that had much more chemistry. You didn't have the wheels falling off. Hearing him say this now, I don't know if it recontextualizes anything. The only thing is it might make me worry more about what happened at those last 3 weeks of the year, the three losses. Did we have that kind of offense versus defense type of thing again, where the defense feels like, hey, man, we've been pulling our weight the entire year. We've basically won the 8 games that we've won this year for this team, right? The offense has been along for the ride. We need you guys to come through. They did not. You know, is that the wheels falling off, or is this just Vanette frustrated again because he wasn't a significant part of the offense in any way?
I mean, yeah, I think you could look either way there. You know, he didn't get to see any playoffs. He didn't get to see any real chances here. I mean, in his first game, he made a really nice catch with Mason Rudolph on a scramble drill play where Rudolph kind of had to improvise a little bit, and he threw it behind Vanette and he adjusted. And I thought that was a promising play from him. But you just didn't see him get that many targets this year. I mean, he just wasn't involved in the offense. But then again, who was? I mean, Vance McDonald, according to Next Gen NFL Stats, had the second most yards of separation per route he ran. And he wasn't targeted a whole lot. I think he had 3 touchdowns in the season. You know, So, I mean, if Vance not getting those targets, then Vanette can't get those targets. So, I just think that it's a little strong to say the wheels were coming off. I mean, the wheels were off before you got there, buddy, and it was still charging forward.
Right. The wheels came off well before he got there, right? Ben was already hurt by the time he got there. Mason was already the starter. The Steelers had just lost that game to the 49ers where they got 5 turnovers and lost anyway. It was a crazy time that he came into. But when he got there, things went well. I feel like, you know, look, with Vanette, there's some of this that is kind of, you know, maybe some locker room turmoil again, although it just feels like, you know, every year in Pittsburgh, we're singing the same tune with that. Yeah. To counter my own conspiracy theory talk, just feel like, you know, Vanette's just a bit of like a drama guy, right? I mean, you know, he reminds me a little bit of Ben, of kind of playing up every situation. The wheels were coming off for Vanette because the Steelers didn't have a quarterback, right? I think that's what he means. The injury situation was bad. You know, Connor would go down against the Chargers. The running game situation got bad. And then, you know, his comments about, you know, wasn't my favorite time. Well, no crap. You were in a bad offense. I mean, you were in the worst. You were in probably the worst offense in the NFL last year, if not for the New York Jets. I get that it was a bad year for you. I just hope his comments had nothing to do with anything in the locker room, because one of the things that I'm so hopeful about the 2019 season is that everything that happened before with Antonio Brown in the locker room kind of turning on one another, you know, that the Steelers had made such an emphasis last year of fixing all of that and, you know, kind of, you know, kumbayaing the locker room. And they got that done. And it felt like by the end of last season, you know, this team was a quarterback away from being competitive. So Vanette's comments, you know, they throw a wrench in that. But I don't know. I'm still going to be hopeful that this team can come out of this without any BS. I hope the Vanette comments are just about injuries and nothing else.
Yeah, you got to hope that that's what it is. You know, someone brought up in the comment section of Hunter's article a very good point. You know, Jesse James also made some comments while leaving the Steelers, and that was just last year. Now, of course, that was about, you know, Diva, and he was obviously talking about, he called them the Kardashians, and it was obviously about Antonio Brown and everything. But, I mean, again, as someone who was in the Steelers locker room and talking to these guys, there was no big circus problem. The problem was Antonio Brown. That was it.
Right.
And this year there was no locker room problem. I mean, this team with no quarterback, and I mean, Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges tried their best, but there were at least 32 other quarterbacks in the league that were better than them. And that's including at least one backup.
I saw a chart the other day, that listed every single way you could rank quarterbacks, right? QBR, you know, completion percentage over expectation, and all the different analytics things that people use. Devlin Hodges and Mason Rudolph were 32 and 33.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's abysmal.
Yeah. That's not great. Not great.
Gosh. So I think that you have to put that in perspective with Nick Vanette's situation here. And you know, you hope the guy does well, you know, with the Broncos or whatever, but you know, it's also possible when you look at when he was signed, it's also possible that maybe when he was talking to the Steelers that they were kind of telling him, hey, we might sign you, when they signed Eric Ebron, and then it was clear they weren't going to sign him. So he might have been unhappy about that as well. Sure. Because you look at the timing, he got signed after Ebron got signed with the Steelers. So there's also that possibility that he was holding out hope that the Steelers would bring him back. But
yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure he doesn't look back at his time with the Steelers with, you know, oh, that was one of my favorite years, right? Because, I mean, you know, he played on an offense that was just such crap. And the tight ends, you know, not only did he have nothing to do with the offense, I mean, you know, Vance McDonald, who, like you said, you know, should have had a great year. You know, he was also non-existent in the offense. So, yeah, I get what he's saying there. I just, you know, again, I hope it's about on-the-field stuff and not off-the-field stuff.
I agree with that. All right. With that, we're going to move on to our network. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to be moving on to our final segment where we're going to be doing our press conference. We have Mike Tomlin here who's going to
– That's right.
Who's willing to do that. So, Tony, anything else you want to say?
Oh, right. Yeah, you got to do your last shot. That's right. You got to do one more. And then we'll get to Mike Tomlin.
I'm so stupid. I had you. I was trying
to. You actually could have gone to break there.
Pinfoil hat Tony. Like, you're supposed to have the crazy. So I was like, I wanted to give you some more chances. Like, you know, was there a Redskins plane in Nick Vanette's backyard or something? Something along those lines.
Not this time. All right, let's do the final shot, and then we'll get Mike Tomlin on.
This is a good one. Okay, guys, just know this. I love you, Locked On listeners. Thanks for getting me to the final four. This is the fourth shot representing the fourth win we had in the tournament. Next year, we'll do better, but I'm going to leave the floor to Tomlin after this. Here we go.
So this would have been like if you won, like, what, 52-48 in the final?
Yes.
So, like, the least amount of shots you could have done is two, because it could have been 51-49.
Right.
Maybe we should have taken your – maybe the idea would have been, like, you take your winning percentage and then divide it by two, right?
Yeah, that probably would have worked.
That probably would have been better. Four shots is a lot, man. How you doing?
Oh, man.
It's a short one. By the way, you know, we don't – I know people – we do this live, by the way. I know you guys listening know that. But Chris and I have been talking for – how long have we been talking now? Like, this is not very long. Like, it's 40 minutes? You just took four shots in 40 minutes. This is going to be a fun third segment.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, good thing Mike Tomlin's taken over. We'll be back right after this. All right, everyone. Coach is coming to the podium. All right. Good evening. We came into this tournament with high hopes. We came in. We knew that we were in the business of winning rounds in the Pittsburgh Media March Madness tournament. We measured success by how many wins we had and how many losses we had. In this case, we had four wins and only one loss. We know more about ourselves because of the process that we went through and the methods that we achieved to get moved forward each round. We had a lot of above the neck votes and retweets, obviously, and we were able to raise hell in March, but we did not in April. We want to tip our hat because Bill Hillgrove, he's a heck of a competitor. He gets Twitter votes the way we aspire to get Twitter votes. We tip our hat to him, and we're going to use this as a learning experience moving forward. By no means, we're going to make excuses for ourselves, made our bed, so we're going to lie in it. We needed to find a method to come up with more splash votes, but we didn't live up to the challenge. It is what it is. The standard is the standard. Questions?
Coach, question here. You faced a lot of different competition week to week, right? You know, Penguins guy one week, Steelers guy the next week. Can you talk about the week to week strategy? Did you guys change up the strategy week to week?
It's a good question, Tony. We came up each week, you got to do something different. And, you know, one week, first week we go up against Kobe Armstrong, we had to paint the barn red. And when we painted, so we had red paint, so we painted the barn red, and we came out victorious. But after that round, we ran out of red paint, so then we painted the barn yellow against Jim Colony. And we realized that was a winning formula because we painted it red week, one week and one, painted yellow the second week and one. So then we went back to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever you get your painting supplies. We got some more paint. So then the next week, we went up against Jason Mackey. We painted the barn red again, and we were yet again victorious. We lived up to the standard because the standard is the standard. And then after that, we figured we're going up against Dan Potash, and we painted the barn yellow, and we were victorious again. But then we realized that we were about to face Bill Hillgrove, who's another one seed in the Final Four. And then what we had done by painting the barn red and yellow so many times that we had now made an orange barn, and orange is the color of both the Bengals and the Browns. And those are not teams that we aspire to be like when we want to get Twitter votes, but it is what it is. We don't live in our fears about who we face. We live up to the standard. We made our bed with an orange barn, so we are going to lie in it.
You know, a couple weeks ago, you were on Saturday Night Football giving an interview with Tony Dungy. You talked about a plan at the end of this whole thing to do tequila shots on the winnings. Do you feel like maybe you looked ahead at all?
You know, we don't live in our fears, Tony. We play whoever's on our schedule, and you know, we just take it week to week. We know that that's the business that we have enfranchised ourselves into, and we view our schedule as a non-issue. So no, we were not looking ahead. We wanted to take it a week by week basis, which is why we made it to the Final Four, and you didn't even make the tournament. So get out of here with that.
Wow, aggressive. Dale Lally, a colleague, tweeted in support. Port of Bill Hillgrove in this tournament. How much do you think that played a role in your loss in this round?
You know, Tony, we can't worry about circumstances that are outside of our control. The proof is in the pudding. We view that as a non-issue. The bottom line is we need to get more splash votes, but we did not get enough splash votes. We had some splash retweets here and there, but when it came down to it, the standard was the standard, and we did not live up to it. You know, we can't wear ourselves out by patting ourselves on the back. You know, we had to it was all about staying in our wheelhouse, and you know, Bill Hillgrove was part of our wheelhouse. He kind of took a lot of our wheelhouse because he is like the voice of the Steelers. So that was difficult. But I felt that Chris did his best with it. My mother worked in shipyards, and there are no days off in a shipyard. And Chris doesn't work in a shipyard, but he didn't take any days off either.
All right, then last question here. Bill Hillgrove, likely to win the whole tournament, probably a favorite coming in. Is it a moral victory at all for you guys to make it this far?
Tony, we're not interested in moral victories. We are interested in getting more Twitter votes. We know we got to get better, and that's on us because the standard is the standard. You know, so any questions about anything about what we need to do, and it's all about how we are going to get better. And we're excited about that challenge. We're looking forward to moving ahead. We measure success this year, but by no means are we going to just accept the results that we had this year and rest on our laurels. We're going to come back, get stronger, get better, because iron sharpens iron. And that's the mantra that we want to live up to, because like I said, I've said about five times in this segment, the standard is the standard. You know, it's fundamental getting votes. There's not anything mystical about getting votes. We just had to get more votes. And the next year, we'll come up with a better plan and take it week by week. And look for more success.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Thank you. All right, guys. Oh, wow. Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, let's everyone thank Mike Tomlin for showing up.
Wow, thank you for being on the show, guys. That was crazy. The first time Mike Tomlin has ever been on Locked On Steelers. Boom, mark it down. This is history right here. Tony, I thought you did really well with those questions, man. Mike really came at you strong when you attacked him.
He did. Listen, you know, that's the thing about Mike. You know, he's not afraid to go at you a little bit.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, well, we know some other members in the media that he goes at a lot. Not gonna name any names.
Not gonna name names. We met him. Yeah. We like him.
we like them. But yeah. So great questions there, Tony. I hope you guys also enjoyed that. You know, Tom brought up some good points, man. You know, this is just it was rough going up against Bill Hillgrove. And like at one point, you the Locked On listeners, you got us to 50-50 with Bill Hillgrove.
Yeah, we got to give a shout out. We got to give a shout out to the guy who tried to put it all together in the group. I believe it's Philip, I believe was his name, but I'm going to look it up here.
Brian Thomas, there were a bunch of you guys. That thing, it wasn't just one person trying to put it together in the group. So many of you guys were retweeting this, sharing this across. There was a Jesse Elwood, I think it was. There were so many of you guys that just kept retweeting and sharing it amongst your own networks. And I really appreciate that, all the people that came through with the votes. And even in the rounds before, I mean, it was just so cool. Like, I would tweet, like, when I was against Dan Potash, at one time, I was down 75% to 25%. And I put the post up in the Facebook group, and like, you know, people were like, oh, we got you. And like, there was like, you know, I saw like there were memes like the backup has arrived. And then all of a sudden I'm up like 60 to 30 on it. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Crap. So the Locked On listeners, y'all wrote at dawn, man. I know Coach Tomlin said we don't take moral victories over here. We do not. But we do look at things realistically. And as a 16 seed, if you get to the Final Four, you had a heck of a tournament. With all that being
said. Well done, Chris. Yeah, I mean, listen, making the Final Four of that tournament's a hell of an accomplishment. And you lost to the guy who was going to go on to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to win it. You know, and it's crazy because none of the other rounds, I do feel like Dale kind of to Dale Lally. You're like, dang, we're from the same conference. We're from the DK conference. And he's
you know what it is? You know what it is? It's sour grapes, Chris. Did he make the Final Four? I don't think he made it.
I don't think he made the Elite Eight.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe that's what that's about. Is that, you know, Dale was hurting that I was the last remaining contestant from the DK conference. So I mean, it is what it is, though. You know, like you said, the standard is the standard. I wasn't saying that. It was Coach Tomlin saying that. But
obviously.
Obviously. Can't believe there weren't more obviouslys there. So that was pretty cool. So thanks to, again, to all those who did vote. It was a fun trip on the tournament. It was a fun little experiment. I honestly, and also thanks, shout out to Joey Bag of Donuts for putting that tournament together in the first place and even putting me in it. Cause I thought last year I should have been in the tournament. I think someone else might've did it deep last year. And I was like, man, I got to get in this tournament. And this year I was a 16 seed. So I was just happy to be in it. Honestly, I've been planning this Tomlin segment since we faced Colby Armstrong in week one. I was expecting to not win and be able to do this, but Coach Tomlin hung in there. He waited like a whole month for us to do this. So shout out to him for sticking with us. So thanks again. And Tony, thanks for doing Tony Tuesday with us.
Absolutely.
This is a lot of fun. Please let people know where they can find you and what you're up to lately.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. You can find my new YouTube show. It's called AFC North Talk. It's me, a guy from the Ravens, Bengals, and Browns. We do it every other week. It's live on Monday night, so if you subscribe, make sure you hit the little notification bell. You'll get notified when we go live on Mondays. If you can't watch it live on Monday, you can watch the video on YouTube. Search AFC North Talk.
Awesome. Thanks, Tony. This is the Locked On Steelers podcast. If you're not subscribed already, you can do so via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Tony, is the Himalaya app still new or is it getting
brand new? In fact, I'm surprised you know about it because it's so new. Yeah, it just came out. Actually, it's called the Himalaya app. You can find Locked On Steelers.
Anyways, you can find the Locked On Steelers podcast anywhere the podcasts are hosted. If you get a chance, please leave us a 5-star review and a positive comment. If you do so, you will get your review read on the show. In fact, you'll get it just like Mike 4385 did. He left a 5-star review for us. He says, Locked On review, longtime listener of the podcast all the way back to the John Ledger days. John Ledger, we just had him back on the show a couple weeks ago. This is the first thing I listen to on my daily commute to work, and I love all the awesome Steelers updates and news Chris brings to Steelers Nation. Love Tony's Tuesdays, and even more, I love the Fantasy Draft Friday. Keep up the good work, Owen. Thank you so much for the heads up on the DK Sports with their free subscription to essential workers. Stay safe. Go Steelers. Thanks again, Mike 4385. It's listeners like you, listeners like all of you Locked On listeners. We now have over 500 people in this Facebook group. If you want to participate in Mock Draft Monday or Fantasy Draft Friday, go on Facebook. Search Facebook. And for Locked On Steelers, you can ask to join the group. I add you as soon as I can. And then you'll be joining over 500 other loyal Locked On listeners that talk about stuff every day. You can joke around with stuff in there, post funny memes, and have fun conversations. It's a safe space for Steelers fans to just kind of talk about what they want to talk about and then also play the games that we like to do here. And also let myself and Tony know what we think because we're both in this group and we interact with you there as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at Carter Critiques. If you follow me, I'll follow you back. I'm always down to respond to ads, DMs, anything like that. If I don't respond, just please understand it. It's busy. You know, I work like 3 different jobs, so it's not always easy to respond to things. But thanks again to all those who are listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more for Wednesday on the Locked On Steelers podcast.